At Lowe's, our members get more. With the MyLowe's Rewards programs, you can shop member-only deals for your home and business every week. Plus, members earn points on eligible purchases. So what are you waiting for? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply.
Hi, I'm Cindy Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 mg dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 mg dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Movies and Booze, I'm Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
It is indeed time for Movies and Booze. Dee Reddy, Olivia Fahey and Dean McGuinness join us once again. Good afternoon to you all.
Afternoon.
You brought in the inevitable non-alcoholic beer.
Well, no, I have a non-alcoholic beer and quite a strong alcoholic beer. And I am encouraging everybody to embrace polygamy.
Right. Yes.
So basically the logic that I'm working on, we have one of the highest levels of brand loyalty to beer in Ireland. And the big brewers, they kind of encourage us to, that you know, they develop an image and get us to buy into that image and then make sure the beer is available. And then what happens in flavour terms is people develop a picture of the flavour of brand X beer.
Okay.
And they come to a point where they start to think brand X beer good, not brand X beer bad. So the brand loyalty means that they kind of only, and you know, you've heard
everyone starts talking like a robot at this point. Yeah, brand X bad.
Pretty much. Yeah. You've seen it where somebody says, oh, I've had a pint of X and it tastes terrible in this pub.
Yeah.
And somebody says, do you want a pint of the other type of style of that beer? I won't name brands because I'm talking about bad beer. And they say, no, God, I'd never drink that. I'll have a pint of the bad beer.
Yeah.
Because they're just completely brand loyal. My argument is if you're polygamous and you kind of look at it and say, brand A is good, brand B might be good in another situation, and brand C might be good in a completely different situation, then that's a better approach to have. And what I think is interesting on non-alcoholic beers is that the big brands now all have their own version of a non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah.
And what they're kind of saying is, you know, we want you to be monogamous with our non-alcoholic beers. So just the same way as you're very loyal to your wife and you have a single relationship with your wife, you should be loyal to the brand of beer. But sometimes it's appropriate to have something different so you can have a relationship with the brand of beer's little sister.
Okay.
Yeah.
That took a swerve. Sorry. Which one is my wife in this one?
I just love the look on all of our faces as you just turned around.
Okay, so this is a kind of a Mormon situation? They don't drink, so it can't be them. No.
Could have said cousin. Right. You have to be little sister.
So I'm kind of thinking that you can't argue that if you're used to drinking a brand of beer that's alcoholic and then you're pushed to drinking the non-alcoholic version, you're not really being loyal to that brand of beer. You're having something completely different.
But can't you say if you like the alcoholic version of a beer but you also drink occasionally the non-alcoholic, that's not really cheating? Well, I know it's a bit Bill Clinton-y, but you know, it's close enough.
But by definition, it's polygamous, so I think we should embrace polygamy.
Okay, all right.
Yes, you're loving two beers.
Okay.
Yep.
We're all very uncomfortable now. Olivia's moved her chair away from Dana. The last show, girl, it feels like it's been out for a million years.
Yeah, actually. I was actually surprised that it was only coming out this weekend.
Yeah.
So yes, it's in cinemas now, starring Pamela Anderson, Jamie Lee Curtis, a few other familiar faces in there as well. And yeah, it's kind of like been her big comeback movie. She'd kind of stepped away from acting, and she was more kind of doing like activism and things like that. Mm. And yeah, she got the script from Gia Coppola, who is of course a member of the Coppola family, Frances's
granddaughter.
Yeah. And yeah, she decided that this was amazing. And then Jamie Lee Curtis heard that Pamela Anderson was connected, and without even reading the script, she said, "Yep, yeah, I'm down. I want to do this, and I want to work with Pamela." And actually, I have to say, they did have very good chemistry. The film itself, well, ooh, very artsy.
Oh,
so okay. But it is
a second generation, a third generation Coppola, to be fair.
And it was one of those movies where you're kind of like, okay, in most cases it worked. In other cases, like, that could have been maybe not had this like little hazy thing going on at the side of the screen. Like, it could have just been an actually in focus shot, as opposed to this artsy kind of thing. It's like, oh, we're going to make it a little bit blurry here. So,
okay. But Pamela Anderson, I'm interested to know about her performance.
So, hit and miss. Now, okay. Very much impressed me in certain scenes. There's one moment where Shelley, her character, is having an absolute meltdown in a car park. And the emotion that comes out in that scene, you can tell that she feels and she means every single word that's coming out of her mouth. It's actually a really, really heartbreaking moment. And then she's having this other scene where she's trying to have a heart-to-heart with her daughter. And I think maybe she was trying to lean too much into the whole thing of like they were estranged and didn't really know how to talk to her. But it really felt like she just didn't believe anything that she was sort of saying. So it lacked a bit of the depth in that sense. But then when she's like calling some of the other showgirls names and like giving out to them and slagging them off, that was like very natural, off the cuff kind of style. Whereas some of the other bits just felt a little bit strained.
Yeah. Is that, you know, the whole thing, like, she appears at all these awards things and she's not wearing makeup now. I assume she's making some sort of statement by doing that I'm an actor now.
Not even. It's just a case of that she just decided that she wasn't going to live her life by other people's beauty standards anymore. Alicia Keys has done something similar as well. So she's kind of just embracing that, like, she can now get ready in 10 minutes and not have to worry about sitting in a makeup chair for hours on end and getting her hair done and things like that. She just does it all herself.
She did give an interview as well, where she said that it was kind of the Pamela Anderson of the 90s that we knew. It was almost a role that she played, yeah, and that she has decided to shed herself of that role, and this is the real her.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, that's the last show, girl. Fight or Flight, a really, really innovative and unique concept.
100%. And like, you know me, I love bringing bad movies that I enjoy to the show. And this fits into that fold nicely. Josh Hartnett, he is trying his hand at being an action hero, and he's playing a Secret Service agent who was kind of left to the wind in Bangkok, shall we say. And he gets roped back into the world of espionage when he's trying to chase down this ghost. And they all end up on a plane.
Even that, I assume these intelligence agencies employ hundreds of people. But let's get the loser that we fired to do this. Why do they always do that? It's never going to go well.
So, oh, suddenly we've no staff in Bangkok.
Yeah. Is there a thing where Elon Musk has sacked them all? And so this is the only guy left.
I will say, actually, yes, there is an explainer in the beginning when an entire team gets wiped out in a bomb explosion. So spoiler alert, that's how the film opens.
All right.
But it is still one of those things of, you know, it's literally, as you said, it always happens that suddenly it's just someone is their only hope on this. But yeah, it turns out he's not the only one chasing, nearly voiced a spoiler there, chasing the person down on the plane. And it's basically full of assassins who are trying to collect a bounty.
Mm-hmm.
So it all kind of goes a bit arseway, shall we say. And yeah, they basically have been trying to describe it as John Wick on a plane. I would actually say it's more akin to Bullet Train, and with a little bit of Argyle kind of will not curse live on air.
The Wesley Snipes film Passenger 47 or something
like that.
And it's Con Air as well. The one where it's like loads of convicts on a plane.
But in terms of like the style of like the fight choreography and the storyline itself.
Snakes on a plane.
Yeah.
Snakes are great in that.
There's a bit of moment where like he's kind of injected himself with what he thinks is like a painkiller but is not, and he is really, really high, and there's all of these like fireworks kind of going off, and it just reminded me of that end sequence in Argyle when suddenly everything is just like pink and blue and all this like coloured powder kind of exploding around them instead of blood.
Oh. cool.
Okay.
There's a zombie film called Flight of the Living Dead, mm-hmm. which is awful now, to be fair, but there's a really good running gag in it where zombies that have turned while they had, when they hadn't taken off their seatbelts before they had turned, they're just stuck in their seats, like kind of shuffling. And in every shot, you can see a couple of seated zombies because of that. It's a good gag.
John and Cork says, many years ago in the bar in UCD, they did a beer taste test. People were given samples of various beers and asked to score each 1 to 10. They were given a voucher for a free pint of their choice for their trouble. By comparing the scores they gave the beers with the pint they actually ordered, it was discovered that some people ordered the beer they rate as the lowest. Now, there is brand loyalties that they don't really know, like what it tastes like.
I also,
it tastes the same.
I did a replicated a study, got the kids to do a science experiment in school, not on beer, on soft drinks.
I'm glad there are some limits.
You can sense the question for
me. I can just see that going down the path there.
Mammy and her sister are here again.
Oh, yeah, I'm digging myself out of the hole.
Yeah, you'll be sleeping in the car tonight.
I love that we haven't even had a sip of beer yet, and we're already like in hysterics.
The only thing that makes me comfortable is my wife doesn't have a sister, so thank God for that. No, but they did an experiment, and what we did was put Coca-Cola into a Coke bottle and into an Aldi own label bottle, and got people to taste both of them and ask for their preference purely on flavour. And out of 27, 24 people liked one over the other, even though they were drinking exactly the same liquid.
Yeah.
And it's consistent. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Right. Onto things, I suppose, a bit grimmer. Well, why are the Baldwins making a programme about themselves? Why do they think anyone's interested in them?
Well, I mean, a lot of people are interested in them, to be honest. If it was just about Hilaria Baldwin... Sign me up. I'm there. Like, she is one of the funniest sort of things that has happened in popular culture of late. So for anyone who isn't aware, she is the wife of Alec Baldwin. She has kind of made a name for herself as a lifestyle influencer. She speaks with a Spanish accent and had told everyone that she grew up in Spain. But a couple of years ago, I think it was during COVID when people had not much else to be doing, but a couple of people who had attended high school with her in Boston, Massachusetts, were like, her name used to be Hillary and that's not her accent. So she has had to defend the cultural appropriation of the Spanish nation. There is,
does she still talk in that accent?
She has doubled down. She doubles down in the...
you know your woman in Modern Family. Is it that kind of an accent?
It is. Like, there's one clip that went viral that is, I now can't slice cucumber without referencing it myself, where she's like, and now we cut the, how do you say, cucumber? She literally has said cucumber normally about 5 minutes before. It's so, so funny. But anyway, she maintains in the in this new fly on the wall series, The Baldwins, that it's because, yes, her family did take annual holidays to Spain, but they were also a Spanish speaking household at home. I'm convinced, my personal theory, so there's like, there's no weight behind this, but I'm convinced they did meet in a bar, that's on record, that she was putting on an accent to try and make herself seem more interesting. And now she's had to commit to the bit.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not alone in thinking that. But yeah, so that's the kind of lighter side of the Baldwins. The less light side of it, unfortunately, is that it follows the family. So it's their 7 children and 8 pets in the aftermath of the awful incident that happened on set for the film Rust, where Alec Baldwin fired what was meant to have been a gun with blanks in it, and unfortunately it wasn't, and a member of the crew, 2 were hit, so it passed through one person, hit another, the videographer, and one of the people on set did actually pass away, and so this documentary has been reality TV show has been widely criticised as being like an attempt by Alec and Hilaria Baldwin to kind of
rehabilitate
themselves. Now, to further complicate that, just in the last 24 hours, a trailer has been released for Last Take, Rust, and the story of Halnia, who is the lady that passed away. And this is a this takes like on set footage and shows what happened as the set turned into an active crime scene. So the timing of that for the Baldwins is just, it makes what looked like a pretty callous attempt at re-earning public sympathy, it kind of makes it look even worse, doesn't it?
Oh, God. Well, I suppose it depends on the documentary. What does the documentary reveal about
him? So I've watched the trailer of it, because that's all that's available at the moment. It's coming out on March 11th on Hulu in the US. Like the bit of Alec Baldwin that they show in it, to be fair to, like, I have always had sympathy for him in what has happened there. And they do actually feature him being told what that the gun has gone off and that she didn't survive. And that to me seems a little bit cruel to kind of pin that on someone who thought that there was nothing in the gun.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a guy who's been on film sets all his life, really.
Mm.
So I don't know that, personally, I don't know that you could have that expectation that someone would know.
No, absolutely. I think it's possibly a degree of it is like Alec Baldwin's a bit of a dick.
Yeah,
so
there's
more of an inclination to blame him.
Yeah, and I think that's why the Baldwins, the reality TV show, which is kind of like shot in the vein of one of those like noughties TLC programs, like it's such a bad move on their part, because I think it almost makes you rail against the sympathy that you naturally feel for him.
Yeah. Let's have a drink, even if it's non-alcoholic, to ease the pain. Okay, so this is the sister we're drinking.
This is. So we're drinking beer from Dayugi Brewery. They're the brewers of Delirium Tremens. I thought if I was going to do a comparison of two beers with a non-alcoholic version and an alcoholic version, I would see if I could find the most extreme example that I could find. So we've got a beer where the original is named after the shakes that you get if you're suffering from alcohol withdrawal, and it's 8.5%. And the other one then is the non-alcoholic version of that. Just launched at the beer festival in Brussels in September, last September. So it's quite a new beer. Now, the trick with this beer is if you were drinking a glass of Coke, you just drink it as a glass of Coke. Mm. If you have a vodka and Coke, you drink it as a vodka and Coke. But if you've had a vodka and Coke, you don't sit at home drinking a glass of Coke thinking, why is there no alcohol in my Coke?
Yeah.
Coca-Cola. So unless you have small children running around the place, in which case you might be thinking that. But with this, the difficulty with non-alcoholic beers is most people start with the alcoholic version and then they're tasting the non-alcoholic version. So they focus on what has been taken out as opposed to what's been added into it.
Yeah.
If you think of this as a soft drink, and it's an isotonic soft drink made from natural ingredients, grains, hops that are high in antioxidants, then your brain gets into a different place.
So you could go for a run, really, and then knock back a bottle of this.
It is actually superb if you're doing exercise. Yeah, non-alcoholic beer is great because it's isotonic and it'll rehydrate you
quite
well.
Take it with you, you know, as you're running. I'm doing the marathon.
In your squirt bottle.
When you approach it like that, you pay less attention to the fact that the alcohol isn't carrying flavour and taste it for the drink that it is, and it is an absolutely delicious drink. So when you're smelling it, you get aromas of pineapple, grapefruit, lime, certain amount of that comes through in the flavour, and then you've got a lemongrass type of balancing flavour in it, high in carbonation, so there's lovely buzz to it, but it is an absolutely beautifully delicious, refreshing drink, as long as you drink it as thinking of it as a soft drink.
I know, but I must say, I took a sip and I just feel like I've had a sip of Delirium Tremens. And it's probably just completely, you know.
There is an interesting thing with that, because flavour is completely connected to memory. And I've caused you to have some interesting memories of Delirium, because I suggested you went to...
No, I have no memories, actually. I remember walking in.
Use the soft drink analogy. Do you reckon when they took the coca out of Coca-Cola, people had a similar reaction to the way people respond to non-alcoholic beer now? Because it used to have, didn't it?
A long time ago, I think there was. Yeah,
but there must have been a period of time where they, after they'd taken it back, where people were like, this isn't my Coca-Cola.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Danny Dyer was in earlier on. I don't know why the word Coke made me think of that.
Because his new film's called Marching Band.
Which movie would you like to do first?
Oh, let's go with The Last Showgirl.
Let's go with The Last Showgirl after this.
Tell me what she said.
She said the new casino owners want to put their own stamp on the place.
I mean, who puts money into a circus that's not Cirque du Soleil, right? That's dumb.
I knew when we started sharing our theater, when they started taking over our Thursday, Friday, Saturday shows, it was a bad sign.
Yeah, no shit. And also, no, you did not.
Yeah, I did.
Yes. Oh, no, you guys, didn't. Wait.
Did. No, you didn't.
You guys, our show is legendary.
It is, but, you know, Razzle Dazzle, it's old. It's the last show of its kind on the Strip.
I mean, that's what makes it so special, the fact that it's the last one.
There you go. That's The Last Showgirl. That's in movie theaters right now. So, I suppose, is Pamela Anderson the last showgirl, or she's kind of the head of a troupe of showgirls?
So she's not even really the head. She's just kind of the one that's been there the longest. So yeah. She has spent like the last 30 years of her life working in as part of the show. And she has seen girls come and go throughout her life. And then suddenly they turn around and they say, hey, guess what, you guys? In 2 weeks time, it's going to be your last show. Like, it's just, that's it. That's the end. Mm. And she's trying to kind of come to terms with the fact that, like, for what her skills are and for what she actually like did in the show, a lot of that is kind of obsolete and what Vegas is looking for right now. So she tries to like audition for all of these other shows, but she's told that like she's not good enough. Like, she's not a good mover. She's not sexy enough. She's not young enough and all of these different types of things. And she's trying to battle through all of that. All the while her daughter's kind of like coming back into her life. And then she's also trying to balance like everybody else's anxiety over the fact that the show is going to end, where they're worried about where they're going to go. And some of them who have like their own family issues as well that are trying to like depend on her and things like that. And there's one girl played by Kiernan Shipka, who was in Twisters briefly, and Sabrina and Mad Men. She started off in Mad Men, but she was the new Sabrina on Netflix as well.
Oh, yeah.
And she has a, like, she kind of sees Shelley as like her new mother figure, and Shelley's having none of it. Like, she's like, I don't have time for this. And like the poor girl is just like left on the doorstep, just being like, but I need help. Like, what are you going to do? So yeah, like it is a really, I think it's a great observation of the people who have worked on these shows that have kind of seen them become like seen as passé and like not as cool anymore. Because Vegas has changed a lot, even in the last, say, 5 to 10 years, let alone the last 30 years. So I think it's a great way to tell the story. It was just some of the artistic choices that they were making. It kind of took me out of it as opposed to drawing me in a little bit more.
Yeah. And Jamie Lee Curtis, who does she play in it?
So she plays one of Shelley's best friends, whose name I've kind of actually just forgotten just the second. I had it a second ago. It'll come back to me. But she used to work as part of the Razzle Dazzle troupe. And then she moved to work as kind of like a hostess in one of the casinos. And there's one moment where she gets up on top of one of the tables and she just starts like dancing around. And it's like, it's kind of just one of the most Jamie Lee Curtis moments you'll ever see on screen. But honestly, like, you could see why people were praising her so much, because like she's just such a natural in some of these roles, and she just sort of brings a lot of energy to her performances as well that I think only she can do. And it really balanced well with the whole cast that were around her. And Dave Bautista is actually playing the stage manager in this as well. And I just thought it was really great to see him take on another role that's so different to anything else that he has already done.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I really respect him for that, because he is actually a very, very good actor. And anyone who saw Blade Runner, the new one, like, he was phenomenal in that. I couldn't believe the performance he put in such a short space of time on screen. I just thought he was brilliant. So yeah, like, it was like performances actually all round were very, very strong. I just think some of the pacing, even though it's not a very long film, some of the pacing was a little bit off. Some of the choices of like there's a lot of lens flare actually, like for not a Abrams film.
Oh yeah.
It's like there's a lot of lens flare going on.
So is it mostly the direction that you've problem
yeah,
with?
Yeah. Some of the direction and some of the just like, yeah, like the look of the film in the grand scheme of things is great, but there are just certain bits where you're like, did you really need to put that filter on there? Or did you really need to light it that way, kind of thing? So that's just my preference. I know a lot of people probably will feel differently about it. I do think it's worth seeing. If anything, just to be like, oh, wow, look, Pamela Anderson can actually act.
Yeah. But can, yeah, and she can actually act.
She does actually prove that she had the chops probably at the time of like the Baywatch era. And if she had been given the chance to explore that properly, then maybe she would have actually reached a higher level. Because like the more, like, it's like with any skill, the more you do something and the more that you're kind of challenged and that you can push yourself with, the more you're going to get better at it, or at least for the majority of people, that's the case.
No, but it's interesting that that Jamie Lee Curtis, they produce it to a degree, and Jamie Lee Curtis back in the day, where like Jamie Lee Curtis used to be called the body.
Yeah.
And they were all kind of typecast that way.
Big
and they
time.
Had to put a lot of effort into kind of breaking out of that.
They have, yeah. And I think actually this film is also a great example of that. Now, when Jamie Lee Curtis is dancing, you kind of remember why she was called the body. But
there was the scene where she danced in True Lies as well. Yeah.
Iconic.
Absolutely. Back to the body. Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, I think it is definitely... Yeah, it's a step up. And actually, it's now made me more excited to see what Pamela can do now in the new Naked Gun movie, because she's also going to be starring with Liam Neeson in that. So I think that's going to be really interesting, because this was a dramatic performance. That's going to be a more comedic role. So I'm really curious to see what she's going to be able to do with that now as well.
Yeah, I'm very nervous about a new Naked Gun movie.
Well, yeah.
It's so close to my heart.
And they'll
update the jokes. And I know there were, like, I actually, over the Christmas, I watched the original Airplane.
So did we.
Oh, yeah. Some of the jokes.
It is so dodgy. Oh, my God. The jokes are so, like, half of them are racist. It's like, I'm going, oh, no. I can't believe I really like this.
I mean, every 5 seconds, you're kind of going, remember, it was the time. It was just the time.
They can't really make it without updating the jokes.
No, some of them. But
without
like,
ending careers.
But like, you know, but a lot of them are kind of dad jokes. Yeah. Really, it's just like they keep coming every 5 seconds. So you have to laugh. So I hope you keep that part of it. the innate silliness of it. I did a marathon a few years back, says a texter. There was actually a beer station rather than a water station outside UCD that had been set up by the students. A surprisingly large amount of people took the beer at 5 kilometres left in the race.
Yep.
There you go.
Yes.
Staggered the rest of it, kind of thing. There's going to be a live action Barney movie.
Yes,
is he
indeed.
Stuck on a train because he's the last agent that can do this?
This is a funny one because it's A24 who are well known for kind of fairly out there indie films alongside Mattel. So Mattel have obviously seen what happened with Barbie and have realised that there's another piece of intellectual property that can be made, taken advantage of. The plan is that it's actually going to be quite dark. So they're going to lean into the millennial angst of the property rather than fine tuning this for kids. It's for the trials. It's about the trials and tribulations of being a 30 something growing up with Barney and just the level of disenchantment within the generation. Now, possibly the generation are disenchanted because people keep farming their childhood for ways to make money.
Yeah, well, and their adulthood as well for ways to make money.
Yes, indeed.
And your woman from The Bear is going to write it.
So Ayo Edebiri, who's absolutely fantastic, she is confirmed as writing and may also be starring in it as well. Now, she's done some great writing work already. Like, she did a good few episodes of What We Do in the Shadows, which is, of course, very, very funny. And she wrote for that... I think it's on Apple, the kind of modern kind of version of Emily Dickinson's Life Dickinson, but it's kind of quite out there and quite funny. So yeah, I think she'd be really, really good at writing something like this, and she's definitely of the generation that would have grown up with Barney. I do like that they're kind of doing a dark take on it, because when I first heard about it, it did sound like somebody's fever dream.
That, because I always saw it anyway, Barney, because Barney would have been created by boomers.
Mm.
Like, Barney was essentially an acid flashback that they kind of repackaged into a show for kids, really, because in any other context, it's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Hey, kids. Oh, my God. there's going to be... is this like a mashup Cobra Kai Back to the Future or Back to the Future of Cobra Kai?
So... They, in the final episode of Cobra Kai, and this isn't a spoiler, they did a kind of Hitchcock-esque thing where the creators appeared on screen and they're having a conversation and they're talking about the series. So all very meta. And in that conversation, they say, they start talking, they don't actually explicitly say the film that they're talking about, but people have pulled it apart and realised what it is. They say that the show would be set, a different 80s vehicle, the show would be set in Hill Valley, alternate 1985, all we need are Wilson, Thompson and Zane. So that is essentially Thomas F. Wilson, who played Biff, Leah Thompson, who played Lorraine, and Bill Zane, who played a member of Biff's gang in Back to the Future. And then they go on to say, Bill's a friend, so that's Billy Zane. Why not get Crispin too, and maybe Mike to direct? So obviously, Michael J. Fox doesn't act anymore, but he could potentially direct. I think it would be absolutely hilarious if they did do a follow-on and managed to get Crispin Glover to come back to Back to the Future, given that he sued them very famously for reusing footage of him in the first film in the second film when he didn't want to be in it.
And also the actor who did play him was in prosthetics to make him more like him as well.
Yeah.
And that's why there's a lot of SAG rules now of use of image rights.
And funnily enough, those SAG rules now are that came out of the court case are being leaned on by actors in the age of AI.
Yep.
Yeah, well, yeah, they need something. Right, you are listening to the Moncrief Show and News Talk. We do have to take a break after that. More movies and booze. What's our next beer, Dean?
We're on to Delirium Tremens. So this is a beer that was originally brewed in the 1980s. Jan de Leet is the fourth generation of the De Hugie Brewery. And he went out, had a few drinks and came back and told his family that they were going to brew a beer that would be named Delirium Tremens with pink elephants dancing on the label and in psychedelic blue, and it'd be 8.5% and they were going to make millions out of it. And the family said, let's just get him into bed. He'll be okay in the morning, you know. And then he remembered it in the morning and it has been hugely successful. Now, when you're tasting this beer as compared to the alcohol-free version, I think the mindset to get into is if you think of this beer as a kind of a big flavorful main course.
Yes.
The alcohol-free version is the sorbet before it.
Okay.
So you don't do a comparison between the sorbet and the main course, and you don't think...
Oh, you wouldn't drink the non-alcoholic after the alcoholic. Actually, no way. Actually, there is a comparison, but that's... You know, it's vastly superior.
It's richer, yeah. Sorry, now, what you've got, lots of flavour in it. There's a base of bread crust, marzipan, almond, lots of fruit flavour, green grape, the Turkish Delight that you mentioned was in the Delirio earlier on. So there is an amount of common flavour, but the key difference is that the alcohol carries flavour. So alcohol is relatively low boiling point, so it goes volatile quite easily and it carries flavour molecules with it, and those flavour molecules get carried into your nose, so you get a more intense, richer flavour. But both beers incredibly refreshing, just in different ways. Both beers incredibly tasty in different ways. And it's just a question of having your mind in the right place when you were approaching the beers for you to enjoy both of them in two different situations. An interesting thing...
You're saying if you don't like it, it's your fault.
I think that... Dean, you seem to have dropped your shovel. Here it is. So I think people should all drink exactly what they want to drink. And,
you know,
the more choice that there is out there, the better chance that we have of finding beers that we like. But something that does drive me mental is somebody who tells you, you know, oh, what kind of an idiot are you that you don't understand that this is a great beer? If somebody doesn't like the beer, it's not a good beer for them.
Yeah.
Is this marriage-related advice as well? Yeah.
Yes, that's what it is, yeah. The beer, if she's a... Yeah. The beer could be your wife or your wife's sister.
They're the only options, clearly.
If she's not the wife's sister for you, maybe she's another one.
That's never know.
So the new Meghan Markle thing is coming on Netflix. Cue heart attacks in the Daily Mail.
Oh, gosh, it's absolutely gas. So, yeah, it's coming out. It was meant to premiere in January. And at the request of her, apparently, and with the full support of Netflix, they say it was pushed out until next week because of the wildfires, because it's shot in California. It's all about having a beautiful lifestyle there. So, you know, probably not a bad decision. Yeah. It would have been very unseemly. It's called Meghan with Love, and it basically is her in the kitchen with a series of guests like Roy Choi, Mindy Kaling, etc., etc. some, like, they released a, I don't even know if it's a full minute long clip of the series there in the last couple of days. And some of the headlines that the British press has managed to generate out of this already are frankly bonkers. I have some of my favourites for you. So there was this, the three secret tricks that Meghan Markle uses so everyone appears like her BFF. Meghan Markle left stunned by dark admission during her Netflix show. Absolutely. Like, that's not a thing that happened. Mildly shocked.
What was the dark admission?
I think it was somebody said a type of music that they listened to when they were cooking. Like, genuinely, right? Meghan Markle to hijack Oscars to promote Netflix series. And then Meghan Markle's show is brutally mocked by Richard Osman and Marina Hyde. I actually listened to that episode of The Rest is Entertainment. It was pretty balanced. They were like, there's not really, you know, she can't win. You know, she's damned if she does, she's damned if she doesn't. So she might as well just do it the way that she wants to do it, was what they were saying. They were just saying, it's not really the kind of show I'd watch, which is kind of how I feel about it.
Okay,
to be
fair enough. Yeah. I sometimes do feel sympathy for, she actually can't win. Or certainly not in Britain, she can't win.
Yeah, no. I think it's very much a British media thing. She seems to be quite well liked over in the US. So.
Right.
Happy days. Good on her.
Don't mention
she's living in the right place.
Yeah, don't mention politics or anything like that. Right, we'll move on to our second movie. It is Fight or Flight. Here's a clip.
You're gonna die young, man.
If I die in your bar, you can sell my organs to pay my tab.
I don't think they're worth what they used to be.
No. I can't. I just can't run anymore. I'm done.
Just name your price, then.
I can give you your life back.
I can clear your name.
I just need you to get to the airport.
If you want what I'm offering, you need to be on it.
We're tracking a high-value target. I need you to take them into custody alive.
Well, that made no sense whatsoever. perhaps, Olivia, you could explain what's going on.
Yeah, so some of that clip is from when he's getting the phone call from Katie Sackhoff's character, who's trying to basically get him back involved in the work that he used to do in order to help them catch the ghost. And in the meantime, he ends up getting jumped by a lot of burly men who are going to try and kill him for reasons that are explained later on in the film. And, Josh Hartnett decides to beat the unholy hell out of them all and then runs away from the bar into a taxi, asks to be taken to the airport, and then the taxi man just turns around to him and he goes, wet wipe, because he's just covered in blood. And then, to me, I was just like so taken aback by the wet wipe guy that I was like, okay, this could be onto something here.
Yeah.
The humour and action balance is actually... they get it so right at some points, but then they lean way too heavy into the almost Airplane-esque kind of slapstick gags, like screaming in each other's faces, going, No. like, that doesn't work in a lot of cases. Like, you have to be doing a very particular film in order for that to work. This is not that film. Mm. So certain gags were brilliant. Certain gags were woeful. But one thing that I do think was consistent is that the action was top notch. Like, they used every inch of those airplane that they could. There's one assassin that gets thrown into the overhead baggage and then he tries to get out and they're like, no, go back in. And they just like push him in like you do like the leg of the suitcase, and then you close it again to make sure he can't get out. It's those little things that I really appreciated, or using like the packets of crisps as weapons to try and like get people to stop like trying to hit him. It's just those little bits.
So does most of it take place on an airplane then?
Full on the airplane. So they do intercut with scenes from the kind of CIA-esque Overwatch Tower kind of thing. Yeah, so like Katie Sackhoff is kind of running this group where they have like cameras everywhere and they're communicating with him on the plane and all this type of stuff. And basically feeding him information that while they're trying to decode what the ghost looks like, so then he at least knows who he's after. But he discovers very quickly after getting on the plane that there's a lot of other assassins that are also trying to get them. And so he now has to battle not only...
this is like a charter flight for assassins.
Pretty
sort of
much,
thing.
Yeah. like there's one kind of like elderly lady that's on the plane, and one of the air stewards decides to basically like give her a Valium because he was just like, she was very traumatized about having to leave first class.
You can get that on a plane? That's cool.
Might have been his own personal stash. Yeah, yeah. It's not made clear. But yeah, it's definitely not. It's not an Oscar-winning film, but it is something that if you're just at home over the weekend, chucking on the telly.
Points for pointing out the obvious. Is this on a streamer?
It's on Sky Cinema.
It's on Sky Cinema. Right, yes. Okay.
So it's like these types of films, they tend to do better with the at-home viewing, because of course, like Bullet Train and Argyle were both in cinemas. Bullet Train, I think, did much better than expected, maybe because it was actually quite good, and then also did very well when it hit at-home viewing as well, whereas Argyle bombed at the box office and then did very well on Apple Plus.
So right.
I think they're kind of thinking in that sense, let's not bother with the cinematic release and let's just chuck it straight onto Sky Cinema, and I think that's actually where it belongs. It is like, you just sort of sit there and you can just like have a little natter maybe in the middle, but then also laugh at some of the stuff that's going on the screen.
Are there regular passengers on this plane?
There are as well,
pretty much everybody.
Oh, God, yeah. Love them.
Yeah, there's some regular, yeah. There are some innocent lives on this plane.
Oh my gosh.
High stakes.
High stakes there.
And Josh Hartnett in a terrible blonde dye job as well, which I'm not sure if it's the character's choice or whether he made it as a character choice.
Oh, or maybe, I don't know, maybe spies do that. anyway, that's our lot for today. Thanks, of course, to Dee, Olivia and Dean.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
I'm Cyndi Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. And adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.